This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 267 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting of May 11, 2020. The subcommittee is composed of members of the Town Council, School Committee, and Finance Committee. The meeting was hosted on the Zoom platform. The normal disclaimer per Governor Baker's executive order was not disclosed during the meeting by the chair. Each speaker is announced, so you can follow along. The show notes include my notes via Twitter from this meeting, as well as the agenda document with the outline on the current budget proposal. The recording runs just about an hour. So let's listen to the Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting discussing the FY 2021 budget.
Time being 5:30 p.m. on Monday, May 11th, I call the subcommittee for the Franklin Town Council budget to order. We are going to discuss the FY 21 budget update. This will be our second meeting. We had one last Monday, and here we are again to have more fun-filled discussion regarding our upcoming budget concerns and etc. So, Jamie, would you like to take it from here and just do an opener?
Sure. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I attached the memo that all of you saw last week at the Budget Subcommittee to the agenda this week as well. I think it's gotten around. I think folks should probably be familiar with it. I think probably the best way is to obviously answer anybody's questions anybody has. Instead of me just reading the whole thing. But, I mean, in short, there was also an article in the Built the Daily News today about the meeting last week, Chairman. So folks may have seen that, online today. Really what we're looking at is a long-term budget year. This is just the first round of what we see is likely to come. What I've done here is with the finance director, looked at the revenue assumptions that we had built in earlier in March and tried to revise them on some educated guesses, right? New growth is likely to come in lower than it did last year. So we went back and used the assumption of what it was like back in 08, 09 in that recession, thinking that was a good gauge for what's going on now. We basically looked at local receipts, things like recreation, other programs where we know there's going to be some drop in participation. We cut those mostly across the board by 25%. What I have in the memo here is looking at about just under $1.5 million in less revenue from local receipts. We also anticipated a 10% reduction in motor vehicle excise tax revenue, just from the dip in likely different car sales. Or these newer cars. So we went through the entire local receipts assumption model. I included that in the packet as well. Folks can see line item by line item exactly where we decided to lower things. I would note one aberration from that is the counselors know, the EMS, ALS, BLS rates. Part of the collective bargaining process, we did have the council up those rates to make us into the middle of the pack. By no means are our rates anywhere near the top end of those of that particular section. But that should generate a little additional revenue, which I mentioned has been essentially put aside for the additional paramedics that we negotiated with the firefighters union earlier this year, which many of you are familiar with. Really, those are the big highlights. I mean, we're looking right now at property tax revenue going down a minor amount, but our levy will still stay the same because it's set by state statute. As I mentioned, the local receipts will go down. It's worth noting that the budget stabilization fund does not have any money left in it. As folks may remember, we did take the remaining amount of that in the last fiscal year, so there is no money left in the budget stabilization fund. There is no rainy day fund. The town of Franklin does not have such a thing. And the real wild card at this point is unquestionably going to revolve around state aid. We are hearing a lot of things out of Beacon Hill. There's just too many unknowns right now. It appears as if Beacon Hill is going to go through one-month budgets, possibly into the summer. I would expect a final budget you know, likely, more likely than not, to come out and also be processed where we get the actual numbers probably around Labor Day. So we're going to have to likely come back at some point in the fall before we set the tax rate and have a revised budget session then. And we may even get into a point after we see where the trends are for calendar year 2020. We may see a point at which we have to come back a third time, you know, possibly in January or February before we get into the FY22 debate. So those are a few of the big highlights that I think are the points that were in the newspaper article today. And obviously, you know, we're here to have a discussion with the members of the school committee and the finance committee. And you know, I'm obviously happy to answer anything that anyone has. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And just to reiterate some comments of last time, and it's kind of, I guess, the same old song that you just sung, but we've been shouting this out for 5 years, yeah. Saying it's going to come. Everybody has been at budget subcommittee meetings over the last 5 years. I've had the opportunity to sit on those subcommittee meetings, not only as someone on the subcommittee, but also as chairman of the town council. Councilor Mercer has said this as well, that this time was going to come. The money is tight. There's nothing there. And to be blunt, you know, I think I said it at least 5 times last week, if you come with a budget bigger than what we're saying you can come with, it's not going to happen. And I don't want anybody to be embarrassed when we get there. We just can't afford it. It's not that you don't deserve it. It's not that we don't want you to have it. It's just not there, and we can't continue to spend $1.25 or $1.50 for every dollar we bring in, and there needs to be a change, and that's just where we're at. So how would you like
to go ahead? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, to that point, just to emphasize this, I went back and looked at previous fiscal forecasts, and this is what I wrote on March 4th at the town council, where we had the room packed with folks. So listen, I said, the final takeaway message is that given the current economic conditions in Massachusetts, we expect the above trends to continue on a rinse and repeat basis for the next two fiscal years, barring any unforeseen circumstance in the economy or other major unforeseen global or national event. That was on March 4th. I think we've seen that event now. And, you know, we've been in this structural budget difficulty for at least since I've been in Franklin. And it's been a part of our fiscal forecast for years. And so I think what this pandemic is likely to do is just exacerbate and expedite any of those difficulties that you just spoke of, Mr. Chairman, and we've talked about, you know, for several years at least, going back to Mr. Nutting, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So I think the trend has always been there. I think this is just an event that's going to help us, you know, expedite the decision-making process.
That's a good point. Expedite is the perfect word for it. We thought we had another year and a half, 2 years out of this, and it doesn't exist. It's here we are. It's time to pay the piper, and we got to start reaching into to the money. And there's no secret, or what people often say, you know, pull it out of this fund or pull it out of that. We don't have any secret closets stored with money. If we did, we would have used them a long time ago for all of the departments. So. So moving forward, Jamie, how do you want to open this up and run this? Do you want to, we can just have a, I can open up for questions. I can go to a couple people in different committees. What would you like to do?
I think, maybe just go in order. Maybe start with the members of the council and then the school committee and then the FinCom.
Okay. All right. I'll start with council. Because this is a Zoom call, we still have to follow. If you're not on the committee, you can't talk, or has that been changed now?
That is correct. No, there's nothing changed.
Okay, perfect. So I think that committee on the council is Melanie, Tommy, Debbie, and Debbie is not here. So I will go to Melanie first. No offense to Tom, but ladies first. So Melanie, anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that, I think Jamie said what I wanted to make sure people understood, was that there is the stabilization fund is empty, that it's not, we don't have that anymore. And also we really don't know what's gonna happen until we get that state aid information. And I think we should be thinking about, you know, revisiting this a few times. I think like Jamie said, it's not, there isn't any money there, so it's kind of, what can we do? So that's...
Yep. I think you're right, Councilor Hammond. I think you're right on the money. We've got a plan, but we've got a plan for what we have today and hope that it gets better. And if it gets better, we all succeed. If we get an extra dollar here or $1 million there, we'll take it and we'll spend it accordingly. But we have to plan with the money that we currently have, right?
Right.
Excellent. Councilor Mercer, Mr. Chairman, what say you?
Unfortunately, I wish it was better news for everyone, but it just isn't. And as we approach the next fiscal year, it's not a pretty picture. As everybody has just said, you know, the stabilization fund is depleted. We need to tighten our belts across the board. Both we need to as a council, I think the school committee needs to as a school committee. We need to look for every dollar we can, find out what we can do, be prepared for worst case scenario, and hope for the better. But as everybody has said, you know, we're probably looking at the budget now. We're going to do it again probably 3 months from now. And, you know, we'll probably redo the budget again come the end of the year or the beginning of 2021.
Perfect. Debbie is not here, although she is home feeling well, or getting better. So we'll wish her well as Councilor Pellegrini well from her recent surgery. FinCom, Mike, are you here? I think I saw you somewhere. Oh, there's Mike. Anything to add, Mike?
No, I agree with the previous comments. Our primary responsibility is to balance the budget. We owe that to the town with the revenue that we have. And I think it's up to the town. All of us are town members in addition to serving our town, but it's up to the town members to decide whether the services that we're getting for the revenue that we have are adequate. And if they are not, then there are other alternatives like overrides, et cetera, that the town could form a committee to do. But our responsibility is to balance the budget. And that is what my obligation to do is with the FinCom.
Great point. Sue, and I saw George, do either one of you have anything to add from the FinCom?
I do have a couple of questions. So Jamie, on the information that you sent around on the, I believe the on the fiscal year 21 budget update on February 20, I'm getting my dates wrong. The most recent one that you sent around, Jamie.
May 1st.
May 1st. Our revenue coming in at 118.9 million and budgets by department at 118.9 million. How did you determine the breakout of that 118.9 as kind of targets for everybody to hit? Are you able to address that?
That's a really good question. So it's not, number one, as most people probably know, it's not as if we just start from zero. You know, we don't do zero-based budgeting, you know, in the traditional academic sense where you just, you know, throw it all out and have some sort of system. What we do is we look at the cost drivers and we try to address those, you know, in terms of what, you know, we can afford within the revenue pie. There's no magical split where we could easily say 4% here, 10% there, 21% there, 31% there. You know, I think what I try to do, you know, and I can only speak for the municipal department, you know, when I go through their budgets, you know, we go through every line item and every dollar that goes in. And there's certainly a lot of things that on the municipal side we're able to say this year, you know, we don't need anymore, or we reform those things. You know, in the case of the police department, you know, last year we negotiated with them a new schedule change, which saved about $500,000 in operating money. So we were able to hire some additional officers, you know, so we can do it through collective bargaining. You look at in my model this year, I'm negotiating a merger between two regional dispatch centers, which should free up approximately $600,000 out of municipal operations, which is enabling us to do additional things. So, you know, on the municipal side, I can speak to that, where I could go department by department and, you know, pretty much talk about them, you know, as long as you want. But there is no secret percentage or, you know, formulaic place where you just kind of say, oh, okay, this is that, and it's easy to say, well, this is your automatic percentage for next year. We do put out a series of instructions every year at the department head level. When they get my memo to bring in their operating budgets, you know, we try to assess. Essentially, every year we ask for a maintenance level budget, which is basically a level service budget, in addition to whatever contractual obligations are out there. And generally, through the year, if you look at even my budget, over time, has gone down the last few years because we've decided to move things around, get rid of this service, change a little bit of this. The pay structures are different for people. So we just try to work within the budget to not have major cost drivers, in terms of what we put out there. So there's no magical percentage, but we try to look at what's in front of us, what the need is. I think in a year like this, it's awfully difficult to look at the Board of Health, for example, and find a place to cut. They're likely going to have a lot of responsibility on their backs pretty soon. Their budget went up modestly. We also have a new health director, and we're merging some line items. So we're trying to reform their department while we have a new health director as well. So I think there's no rule of thumb, if you will, Sue. It's really something where I think every year we try to look at exactly what is the services the citizens of Franklin deserve and want now, and how are we going to fund it relative to everybody else. It's probably the best answer I could probably give. I hope that answers some of the questions.
All right, thank you. So I guess I'm going to reiterate my point from last week that clearly very difficult decisions are going to have to be made. And without a good amount of metrics in front of us, it's going to be difficult to make those determinations. I'm happy to send out a list of metrics that I think would be helpful. I know I've shared them with a few people on the call at this point, but we're going to have to make some real tough decisions. And without history, 5-year, 10-year history of things like headcount and, you know, population, spending per pupil, service calls from our fire and our police department, et cetera, there's probably a list of, say, 10 really kind of telling metrics. It's going to be difficult to make a decision as to how we allocate. We're only looking at a spending increase of a little over $1 million, if I've got my numbers right. And that could get eaten up just by benefits. So I'm going to reiterate the need for those metrics, definitely as I'm reviewing the budgets, to try to make a determination as to what type of questions I'd like to ask and make sure that I understand that, or make sure that I feel that we are distributing what little money we have in a reasonable and efficient manner. So I'll put out that request again.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think what we need to do is some kind of a forecast. I know Jeff used to have it, and maybe we can find it somewhere. Where really it talked about, you know, we signed a 2-year raise with a, you know, in collective bargaining, we signed a 2-year raise, and we can look at that and kind of, I know it's difficult, but we got to put something together that kind of forecasts out what our numbers are going to be each year and where we're going to look at. It gives us a better understanding, especially if we're going to start coming into hard financial times. And I see your hand up, so I'll let you that and go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you really go back and look at a lot of our materials, there is a lot of stuff and there's a lot of data. I think we can debate metrics. So in terms of call volumes, cut to the chase, Sue, I have all that data. We're going to put it into the book the best we can about the fire department, the police department over, say, the last 5 years. I have the population numbers. Some of this we were collecting for that budget 101 concept too. We had talked about. You're going to get probably an appendix somewhere, 20 years of local receipt data. Okay, new growth history, free cash history. A lot of this, I think, has been put out before. Maybe it's not all in one place. I have numbers on circulation at the library. I have a variety of things that I hope to integrate into this year's budget narrative. After tonight's call, you know, tomorrow, I got 9 days to produce a 120 some odd page budget narrative, some of which has already been worked on, of course. So we're going to try to include it in the best way we can. I also want to remind people that when we put out the budget narrative that's in the town charter, the requirement, in that narrative is a lot of not just quantitative data, but a lot of qualitative points on trying to tell the story of every department in town to the best of their ability. I think for the school department, I'm not going to speak for them, but for the school department, I also know the superintendent has places on the website and a lot of other annual reports and other things that are done over there to deal with enrollment and per pupil expenditures and things of that sort. You know, that traditionally we don't merge all that into one document. It's kind of two, and I'm sure the school department has something on their side that they can point people to. And we'll try to connect the dots in the narrative. But, you know, I think metrics go a far way. But I also have to say, you know, what is actually happening in each department and what departments are facing are very situational. And so we try to address those needs, and we try to address that discussion and that detail in the budget narrative. There's not really a way I can make the document less than 100, you know, 120, 130, 150 pages or something like that. So we hope to provide quite a bit of what you're looking for, you know, and you know, how you read into it and what you think from it. I mean, a lot of people can have different opinions on it, but you know, we hope to provide some of what you've been looking for. We've certainly been ready for this. So, you know, I don't know other than the categories I mentioned what else you might be looking for, but, you know, we're going to have the call volume, we're going to have the population, we're going to have the library circulation numbers, we're going to have some local receipt data, and new growth history. I would assume the superintendent has enrollment figures, has per pupil. So, you know, if you have any other ideas of things you want, I can do the best I can to pull it together. You know, and in lieu of that, I mean, I'm just going to try to move forward with the stuff, with the information that we do have.
All right. And just to, one more thought on that, it's that, you know, this is 1 year going into fiscal year 21, but we don't have any indication it's going to get any better for 22 or 23. So my thought would be if we could pull together something that we can update budget to budget to budget, we can kind of start to see the trends. I think that would be extremely useful for us as making, you know, FinCom and town council, school committee, the folks that are actually making the difficult decisions, as well as for the folks in town who are paying attention to the town's finances. So thank you. I'll send you a revised list. Thank you.
I don't see George's picture anymore, but George, if you're there and you'd like to talk, just give us a yell. Okay. If you decide to come in, just yell it out, George. We'll find you. All right. So where do you want to go from here? Jamie, what do you want to do? You want to go down to departments? School committee? Sarah, would you like to be on the spot now and give your thoughts and any ideas?
I'd be happy to jump in and just talk a little bit about where we are from the perspective of the school department's budget. I recognize that in some ways we're working with old information, to Jamie's point in the budget memo related to what we have from the state. It goes back to January with the governor's budget coming out. So similar to what Jamie has done, and we appreciate all the communication from the town administrator's office, we've kind of delayed some of our budgeting process while continuing forward with the information that we know at the time that we know it. In terms of putting the budget together, similar to what Jamie had shared, the budget is put together from requests related to principals and school council, starting with the level service budget, recognizing that there is a level of service that our school families and our students are accustomed to. And then we take a critical lens and approach to the budget, particularly when we think about what the current needs are. There have been ongoing needs that we have not been able to support. And this year we have a handful of items in the budget, which first came forward as the superintendent's recommended budget and was recently adopted by the school committee at its most recent meeting, that focus on a few areas pretty strategically, looking to expand some of our specialized programs within the district, which will help to reduce or eliminate the possibility of out-of-district tuitions, which would come at a higher cost. We do recognize, and we're keeping informed both through Jamie as well as through our own channels, MASC and MASS, about what's happening in the broader world with respect to the economy. So the school committee's budget subcommittee has been having some discussions, and we have a discussion on the agenda tomorrow night with some updated budget figures that Miriam and I have been able to put together in order to take a look at where our proposed expenses are for next year and come up with some creative ways to reduce the overall budget for FY21 at this point in time. In terms of budget history, last year we did make some moves within the budget to at this time in order to create some efficiencies. We reduced 14 and a half positions. The school committee voted to raise fees. We reduced services. We reorganized our nurse leader position and brought that from a consultant into the district, and our nurse leader has been doing phenomenal work for a stipend, particularly in light of the coronavirus pandemic. And we reduced consultants in a couple of areas while also negotiating our one-year contract with some creative language in order to get to that, to get to a 1% COLA last year. So I think, you know, we recognize the fiscal reality that's facing Franklin. I think there is a fiscal reality facing towns across the state and across the country. To the points that you've all made, this is something, though, that I think has been known for some time, and there's been some difficulties even coming into this year, and we do recognize that. The administrative team and the school committee are having some discussions with respect to our budget, and I anticipate that there will be continued conversations over the coming weeks. With that, I guess I'd answer questions or also recognize I'm speaking for the school committee, but Matt, I'll let you facilitate that.
No problem. I did want to let the chairwoman have a turn to speak if she would like. Anne, would you like to say anything while you're here?
Can you hear me? I'm not very good with this sucker.
No, you're good.
Oh, okay, good.
What I will do is just allow you and the members of your school committee budget subcommittee to speak. So if you want to just call on them in that way, I don't know each one of them. So
well, you know what? Maybe why don't I do that? I was going to speak, but maybe I'll let I don't know if
however you want to run it, I'm fine.
Yeah, sure. Let me just see if Jen, if you wanted to add anything. I was going to make a few points, but Jen, I wanted to make sure I asked if you wanted to say something first.
So I think, as Sarah had mentioned, we've been talking about it. We've been looking at revising what we had originally put out there based on the situation. I think we're in the early stages of that conversation, and I think we understand that the budget is locked, and we're only going to be allocated so much funding to kind of play with on our end. This is my first time through the budget process. So in response to that, I guess, Susan, if you could just, the metrics conversation, are you looking at data? Is that what you're talking about? When you talk about metrics?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that beyond what we're already providing?
It's more of a formalization of it. So I'd be happy to do like a side conversation with you with some of the things that I've been looking for, just to try to quantify really how we spend the town's money. It's a lot of money that we spend, and you know, it's very easy to say, roughly 70% of the budget is people. Right. So how is that distributed between town, between school, et cetera? So I can share some of that with you, Jen.
Okay.
I also think it's easier when people share graphs, right? That's, I hate to dumb it down to that, but it's much easier for people to understand a graph than it is 120 pages of how did this come from to this, right? So if you had a graph that showed that 70% of your people, 70% of the town spent it on employees and 20% is spent on healthcare, and then everything else makes up the rest. But I'll quiet down and let you guys talk. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't want to take up everybody's time on this, but I'd be happy to have a side conversation with you, Jen, with a couple of ideas.
That would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I don't think that we disagree that this is dire times, and we do have to be fiscally responsible. And I think from a standpoint of the schools, we're looking to, you know, make those cuts that are least impactful to students. And that's been an underlying philosophy that we've kind of worked with throughout our meet committees. And I think it's something that we continue to really focus on. So that's it. Thank you.
Ian.
Okay.
Back to you.
And I guess Tim's right. I just maybe wanted to take a look maybe at the bigger picture and follow up sort of what Jamie was saying about kind of telling the story, because even we know with a pandemic coming, certainly there have to be, you know, no one's head is in the sand in terms of the, you know, the fiscal realities that are out there. But these conversations were happening even before the pandemic. So I think what I've been hearing out there is that schools have enough money for everything. But I just wanted to paint just a little bit of a picture, because when and if more money comes back, that people have can put it in a context, the story. And one of the things when people say that the schools have enough money is that I want to make sure that they've read the high school accreditation report, for example. The high school received many accommodations, but there were many recommendations about what we need to do to support 21st century skills. One of the things they said is what we have to do is educate the public about the need to support, for more support about the staffing and professionals needed to support those 21st century skills. All one has to do is look at the majors that kids are going into in college now, biochemical engineering, graphic, things, majors that didn't exist a few years ago. These are 21st century skills and what it takes to support that. And then the other thing too is when people say we have enough money, make sure, okay, not only have they read the accreditation report, but they look at the mandates from the state and DESE in terms of special ed. What MCAS, and this is true across many districts in Massachusetts, we have to close the gap between special ed kids and the general population. There is a mandate. We have to support that. That's why so many of the positions we have are to close that gap. We have to, if the state takes over and determines that we're not making adequate yearly progress, the town suffers from that. So when one looks at the costs, we have to make sure we're looking at that data. This is a mandate by the state that we are obligated to close that gap. Because when one looks at the figures around special ed and sees the costs that are associated with special education, that has to be part of that big picture. And that we educate kids till they're 22. We have people who have to go out and find them jobs in the community. And one looks at the severity of the range of special needs that our kids have. And one of the things, again, this is big picture, again, when one thinks about private schools, what do? They pick off, they take the highest performers that the public schools produce, and then they call themselves excellent. They skim those kids off. But those parents who are so invested in education, but have kids who have had severe learning challenges, they keep their kids in the public schools, and they fight like heck to get everything that the law allows, and they should. That's their obligation. They bring in lawyers, they bring in advocates, and the costs are enormous. And that's a huge piece of where the budget goes. And it isn't because Franklin attracts people who have special needs and they're going to come to ours. This is true of schools all across, public schools across the whole state, across the whole country. So again, when we're thinking about the schools have all the money they need, we have to keep thinking about that. And in that regard, when one thinks, for example, and I the charter school is wonderful, I have no complaints, and this is no bashing the charter school. They get a big chunk of money, but what don't they take? They don't educate the special needs kids, the severe special needs kids. So does it seem, does it make sense that all of the money goes there? What they can do is they put it all toward the programs we lose, that we've had to give up because they don't take all those special needs kids. So is it fair that all that money goes there, but that there's not something that's kept back so that there's equity in that? So again, because over the years in being on the school committee, I've heard so many people talk from, you know, from out in the community, the cost of special ed, and what are you doing about it, and why do you have so many out of district placements? And that's a huge part of the budget, but people have to understand why, and we have to keep telling that story. And the other thing too is that when people say we have, you know, the schools have plenty of money, I see it on social media all the time. Just to make sure that they're aware of the mental health challenges that the schools are facing now, that these aren't school problems, they're society's problems. But okay, give them to the school to solve. The opioid and substance use, these aren't school problems, these are community problems. You guys solve them. Then they say vaping. Okay, vaping's not a school problem. Vaping is a societal problem. You guys solve it. Bullying. Bullying isn't a school problem only. It's, it happens outside the school all the time. You guys solve it. So it becomes the supports that we need in this day and age to support the special ed needs of our kids, the mental health and the behavioral challenges that we have. That story has to be told, and we have to keep getting it out there every time people say there's plenty of money out there, that they understand the mandates. And the other thing, too, is when people say there's plenty of money out there, do they understand, have they seen what the educator evaluation system looks like now? When I was first a principal, it was a one-page checklist. The complexity of educator evaluation and what it takes, the number of administrators to do a good job on doing that, and to make sure that we are giving the teachers the support that they need. So the understanding, the again, just to summarize, I know I'm being, again, I tend to be very, very dramatic, and but when money comes down the line, that we're telling, as a community, we're telling the story, because these issues existed before the pandemic, and that, as Mike DeFore was saying, it's sort of the community has to decide what it wants. And the big question, and I'm going to keep putting it out there, I'm going to put it out there every single time, and it is, what happens to a community if the public schools go down? And all we have to do is look examples around us to see what happens, how many people start moving in, what happens to the vibrancy of the community. So I know we have to be realistic about the pandemic and the fallout from all of that. I get it, and I know we have to be realistic and we have to cut back. But anyone who's out there and says we have plenty of money for the schools and we don't have to worry about that, but as Judy said the other night, it's, we have to just as much be thinking of those kids that at the highest performing levels, and that we have to support them for the program so that we can be as competitive as possible. And I know the money's not out there, but my thing tonight is to say that when it comes in, that we have the big picture and we know what the needs are and we understand it, and then we have to ask the community eventually to say, what is it that we want to keep our kids competitive? So I know I'm dramatic, and that's just, you know, I can't help it, but it's sort of, it's public schools, we have to keep them strong. I'm a fanatic, and I know people in the school committee are as well. We're fighting for public schools in a democracy. It's the most important thing. So I yield the floor to somebody else. So,
thank you, Anne. And I completely understand what you're saying. You know, as Councilor Mercer and myself have both sat on the school committee, we get it. It's very hard to tell people that they have to spend more money or have cuts or cut the music, the arts, the sports, anything in the school. Is very hard to do. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do to fix unfunded mandates. In this group, we can continue to lobby our legislators, and hopefully soon we'll have new legislators that we can push even harder on. But that being said, I understand that. And I agree, we have to, it's, when we talk about how a town changes when the schools are not, or the education system is not there, it goes hand in hand. How does a town change when we don't have the proper fire or police or DPW apparatus? All of those are key essentials to our town.
Yes.
We cannot run the town without having enough firefighters and having enough police officers. And each one has to play a key part. And it's a really constant struggle. I know you and I have talked about this number of times between, you know, does this guy get more than this guy? No, everybody needs to get what they need to run their departments. And it's really hard right now. And for us on this town side, we've worked really hard, and this is not to discredit the school side, but I just don't know it as well, and I don't want to make accusations for you and your folks, as I know you guys have been working hard. But on the town side, over the last 3 years, we've made a commitment, and hopefully my fellow councilors that are on this call will start shaking their head as I say this, but we've made a commitment to work with the police department, work with the fire department, work with the DPW, right down to the librarians. Work with the librarians so that we can turn around and redo contracts so that they can somewhat give more services on tighter budgets. We knew it was coming. And I know you've been working on that as well. And unfortunately, until something changes with unfunded mandates, we're just going to have to keep going that way. And it's tough. And, I could give you a number of stories. I'm sure you can give me a number of stories of how we need more money in everything. We need more money at the schools. I need more money. I was at the fire department on Thursday, and we need more money on the fire department. There's things they need, and the police department needs more items, especially with what we're facing today. We all understand this is going to be challenging times. The changes that are coming because of the coronavirus is going to be challenging times on every department. We're seeing that on our police and fire already. We were very fortunate that we kind of, without knowing about it, plan for what could happen by using capital money over the last year to buy some items. We just got, it was pure luck. That being said, I think when we look at the budget that was presented by the town administrator for FY21, I think was that 5-1, Jamie, that you presented it. I don't, and I'm just putting it out there, I don't see that budget being there. I can't see it. Our loss of revenues aren't going to be there. So we're going to have to plan on those. And I want to have the magic bullet, but I think the call tonight and the call last week was really to tell, from the town council subcommittee to everyone on this call, you're going to have to tighten your belts. It's going to be rocky. And when we get to September, we'll look at it again. When we look at December, we'll look at it again. When we look at April, we'll look at it again, and we'll just continue to add money. And every time we can do it, we'll add money. And if there's a dollar there, I'll be the first one to stand up and say, here's your share. Just like I'll do the same for the police and the fire. But it's going to be, I think we're trying to forecast to everybody, it is going to be a rocky road in the next 60 days. And I don't want to see everybody come to the town council, walk out the door with their head hung low, going, I expected this and it's not there, because we've run through all the extra money that ever existed. I know the school department has done that. We've all run through it. And the people in our community have to make a choice on whether or not they want to continue to have the services at where we are or better, or they need to make a choice that they're willing to take cuts. And what those cuts look like is what ultimately it will look like. And I don't know what those will look like for each department, but we're certainly looking at that. I know our town administrator has continued even as early as last week to make some changes on the fire department side to hopefully get us some more revenue over there so that we can free up so that they don't lose any services. So we're constantly trying to do that. I think he spends more time negotiating like a car salesman now than he spends doing anything else with every union that we have. Anything to add, Jamie?
Like to go back to something that Ms. Bergen mentioned.
Please.
I think a couple others about Mike's Dufour's comment earlier. This is not a comment to critique the superintendent's recommended budget, but just to illustrate the point. 2 months ago when we were in this debate back at the council, they were looking for a $3.9 million increase to the budget for all of likely the aforementioned reasons why, plus many others. Mm-hmm. I think that was a grassroots budget. I think it was something that reflected the priorities and demands that were in the school department and in the various schools with the principals and the staff that were there. but we were really only looking at bringing in $3 million. So this structural budget issue that's out there, the demand versus, you know, what exactly we have in revenue, was here before this COVID situation crept up in March. And this is something the town of Franklin has discussed for years now, as I mentioned earlier. And I think Mike Dufour hit it on the head. We're required to present a balanced budget. That is what I'm going to present to the Finance Committee in 2 weeks. And that is ultimately what the Finance Committee will recommend to me to present to the town council in some shape or form and what it's comprised of. But make no mistake, you know, despite how that comes out, the discussion with the folks on this call is always important because we are the elected leaders and the appointed officials in the town that you've hired us to do this, including our department heads and principals. But make no mistake, the conversation that's here needs to be happening throughout the whole town of Franklin. It needs to be happening with citizens. It needs to be happening with moms and fathers. It needs to be happening with children. There is no question that this pandemic is going to change the way we all live in a small ways and large ways. But if we think we're going to solve this, not to anyone's expectations, I'm just trying to emphasize the point. At some point, the conversation needs to be redirected away from us and out to the people in the neighborhood. You cannot come back every year and just continually think you can cut, or find additional revenues through solar agreements or marijuana contracts, and these little dinks and dunks will unquestionably help quite a bit. But I think we're in a position now where the folks, you know, certainly on this call and the other leaders and stakeholders and business leaders and other elected officials on other boards and even appointed boards need to start rerouting the conversation away from the epicenter of the town hall and out into the community to engage people in a civic engagement practice that's going to get more understanding. Metrics are no good if nobody's reading them or nobody's getting them. The dynamics that are here are not dynamics that are anywhere new. They've been going on for several years in Franklin, ever since I've been here. So even before COVID, you go back and just take the school department's budget for this year and you look at the superintendent's recommended budget, there was reason why it was $3.9 million. But even before COVID, there was no way we could possibly ever afford that budget under any scenario. And the reality is when you take $1 million off the top of that, of the revenue for next year before COVID, it was going to go to health insurance and pension. And then, so that's $1 million right off the top of the three. So now you're left with two for everybody else. And so there's, I got to emphasize, there's something not right here where these numbers are coming in and yet we just keep coming back and feeling a dog chasing our tail, having the same conversation. It has got to get out into the streets of the community in different forms. As we've all learned before as well, public officials like myself and the superintendent and our assistants and our staff, you know, only have so much flexibility in terms of what we can go out to do. And I just want to close by saying, you know, Mike's comment earlier really hit the nail on the head, because it's either going to, the balanced budget is either going to come from reductions or not meeting those goals, particularly in like a school department where the objectives were much higher, or there needs to be a community discussion about how those revenues are going to be raised in order to deliver those services. And so I would just emphasize that as we near Memorial Day here, we were having the same conversation roughly a year ago. And I know that there has been quite a bit of discussion in town, but as we move forward into Memorial Day and we get to the end of June, where we have a budget on July 1st that, as I mentioned earlier, or on another call last week with the budget subcommittee, we're really in spring training season right now, getting a budget done. That's just trying to get warmed up. And when we hit July, it's really the beginning of the regular season. And from there on out, it's really about what are we spending money on? What are we bringing in? It's really starting from scratch on July 1. We're going to be monitoring this thing probably every week for the entire year. So it's going to change quite a bit. Now is the time that many in this community need to get together and have these discussion points. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman Mercer.
Just very quickly, Mr. Chairman, You know, and I agree with what Jamie just said, and I think it's important for the community to hear these messages. Everybody makes really good points here. I don't think there's anybody on the council that doesn't understand the needs that the school people have. I also think that we're at a point now and where we continue, we all talk about educate. We not only have to educate the kids, we have to educate the community. We have to educate the community as to what we have to work with. And I think part of that had begun. And I know One Franklin, that's a very important group. It's an influential group. It's a group that can help get the message out. And I think it's important for us as the Joint Budget Subcommittee and as the Town Council, as the School Department, as the Finance Committee, it's up to us to get the message out to the public, the situation that we are in. And I do understand the school department's revolving accounts, they've all been depleted down to nothing over the last few years. As well, the unfunded mandates, I mean, these go back forever, and they continue to just increase, and it just makes it that much more difficult to balance a budget when you're dealing with unfunded mandates. And I think we have to continue to push our legislators to try and deal with some of these, because we're not the only community that's going to be looking at this. Every community in the state is looking at it the same way. And we've all got to push together. It's, and, you know, Jamie and I are always talking about, Jamie talking to other town administrators, trying to get together and make a combined effort. Same thing with the school department and Dr. Hearn, getting the superintendents and getting the school committees and everybody preaching the same message, because we're all in the same boat. It's not unique to Franklin, maybe not Wellesley, but it's certainly not unique to the towns like Franklin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great points, Chairman Mercer. I did put it out. Did anybody else want to speak? Okay. Jamie, anything to say to wrap it up, and then I'll wrap it up and we'll get out of here and let everybody get back to their night.
I think I'm all set, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Excellent. I'm sitting here looking, and maybe Zoom is probably the perfect place for this, because although we all look like the Brady Bunch two times over, I will tell you that, you know, I can't imagine sitting amongst a better group of knowledgeable people that can solve this and that we can get through this. The educational minds that are in this group, the experience, the people who just care about Franklin, it is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, you see people who have been in Franklin their family's been here for generations, people have been here for 5 years, and we all have one thing in common. We care about this town so much that we're willing to show up on a daily basis and fight for, whether it be children, the teachers, the police, the fire, our citizens. And I couldn't be prouder to stand side by side with all of you, knowing that we'll get through this, we'll make the best that we can out of it, and we'll sit here in a year and go, wow, can you imagine we actually did that and we made something wonderful? So I want to stop and just thank each and every one of you for everything that you've done. You've all worked so hard on this. I know you care so much. I talked to many of you, whether it be today or over the weekend or last week, and you all have the same thing. How are we going to make this work? Nobody's saying, how are we going to make this work? Cut from this person. No, everybody's saying, how are we going to make this work? How do we get everybody everything they need? And that doesn't happen in other towns. as somebody that's gone around to a lot of towns, that does not happen. And we've done really good. So I want to thank each and every one of you for being on the call today. We're going to continue this conversation as we proceed into the budget. Hopefully we'll be doing it sooner rather than later, all live and together, so that we can laugh and joke and have a good time. Jamie, do we have an upcoming meeting date?
We did not, Mr. Chairman. I got 9 days to produce a full budget narrative, forecast, and budget for the Finance Committee meetings, which I think are the Wednesday following. I want to say it's May 27th and 28th is the start of those, and then June 2nd and June 4th. Those are the four dates of the Finance Committee meetings after Memorial Day.
Okay.
And then the council dates are in June 7th and 18th.
Well, if nobody has anything else to say, we'll give a motion to adjourn.
Tom, so moved. So moved. I think Matt?
Yes.
George had his hand.
He had his hand up and then he took it down. Did George, did you want to say anything?
Just a quick question to Jamie or to Chris Sandini. I see him here. Does somebody have the last four or five budgets, the raw data, the actual worksheets? Because I'd like to try to take a crack at making Matt's pictures come to reality over the last 4 or 5 years.
I love that.
I may have them stashed, but
no,
worksheets somewhere.
What? Like departmental expenses or what?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah,
we have the numbers. We just got to repackage it.
I'll
talk to Chris and see if he has it in Crystal.
Just the raw data. I don't need anything fancy, just the raw data. I'll figure it out.
George, what exactly, are you looking for the departmental worksheets that we usually produce?
Yes.
That go into the budget, George? The department personnel, expenses, all that stuff?
Yeah, maybe we'll take a crack at it. Making the last 4 or 5 years in pictures and see what it looks like.
Who it's coming out
in pictures?
Yeah, graphs. You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, maybe that'll
100%. I think that's a great idea. So, excellent. Anybody else?
If I may, Matt, just to follow up on that, George, let's you and I connect as well, because I've done a lot of work to try to start that. I don't want you to have to duplicate a similar effort.
Will do.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. With that, I will, all in favor of adjourning,
Hannah, aye.
Mercer,
yes.
Myself. All right. We're out. Thank you, everybody, and have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Great job, everybody.
Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.